You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
On the line, we have Mr. Richard Langston, who has just recently written and published a new biography about classic Dunedin band The Clean. The title of the book is In the Dream Life, You Need a Rubber Soul, named after one of The Clean's tracks. We have Richard joining us from Ōtautahi Christchurch as he goes around the country touring the book. Good morning to you, Richard. How are we?
Morena, Zach. I'm absolutely splendid. We've had two sensational launches, the first in Dunedin, which was super special because David Kilgour and Robert Scott reformed The Clean for the night with a young drummer from Purley.
Yeah, Josh. Zach Nichols. He's amazing.
Yeah, right. And Josh, I think it was Josh.
Oh, Josh Nichols. Yeah, Josh Nichols. Oh, my goodness.
Josh, and he was, and they were sensational.
Mm.
Zach just absolutely knocked everyone over. The sound was so fresh, the energy was just amazing, and they played a blinder, seven songs, and everybody was sort of floating on helium after that. It was just stunning, and so I couldn't have asked for a better launch for what we think is what we all think who have been involved is a great book. You know, we're stoked with it. Mm. So it just felt right, everything about the launch.
I heard that there were people from Look Blue Go Purple there. There was Grant Robertson, and there were a bunch of people from new Dunedin bands there. Is it about as Dunedin as an event can get?
Yeah, I think there was a time actually when the younger musicians in Dunedin were tired of hearing about the Flying Nun myth, but you know, but now that seems to have evaporated. I think, like, so young bands are embracing, you know, what happened here, and the classic example of that is the young band SOG recording a version of Point That Thing, which is great, you know, and David's playing on it. So clearly, there's a lot of goodwill towards The Clean, and as there should be. I mean, they created a wonderful body of work, and they're a living, breathing example of how to go about a music career and not make it a music career, not fall through any of the usual traps of trying to get a major label deal and having someone tell you should be writing hits. And that just never happened for them. They did it their own way from the outset to the end, that they kept control of their music, and they set a wonderful example of how to do it.
Mm-hmm, completely. I'm curious about the title, In the Dream Life, You Need a Rubber Soul. Is that your favourite Clean song?
It's certainly one of them. I think we all wanted a title that wasn't obvious. I mean, the obvious title would have either been Anything Could Happen or Tally Ho.
Yeah.
But I think we wanted a title that was slightly more mysterious than that, because, and also we wanted to nod that The Clean had kept going for more than 30 years. That, you know, their career didn't start in 1978 and finish in 1982, which is what a lot of people who aren't music freaks probably think. They don't realise there's a whole body of, there's five albums, there's a live album, there's CDs of them performing live, you know, in New Zealand and radio stations, all sorts of places. So one of the titles that suggested, well, that was a latter song, and I do love that song. I think it's a great song. It's a classic Clean song, which is lightly, you know, talking about probably being subject to a pretty mundane life and trying to avoid that. It's, which is exactly what The Clean have always done, you know, in their own lives, in their own creative lives, and in their own lives. So I just thought it was right. And also, because we had such a great designer, and because the band had input into how the book should look, the cover looks fantastic.
It does.
And typographically, I think, in the Dream Life, You Need a Rubber Soul, multicolored on the cover. It looks awesome with that photograph taken by Craig McNabb, the genius boy who was photographing them from the outset of The Clean's career. And they were so lucky, they had all these creative people attracted to them. They didn't need a publicist and a manager. They had mates, and they had photographer mates who were bloody brilliant from the outset. So, you know, it all helped. They've always been a communal band and attracted other people.
And I think what you're really talking about there is is something the book captures amazingly, which is how much volunteerism and simple love of the game went into the Clean sort of operation, and to a large degree, a lot of up-and-coming bands in Dunedin and in New Zealand broadly still operate on in this way. For instance, Hamish Kilgore talks about how his and David's mum, Helen, delivered records around Dunedin. Or you have a comment from Andrew Shaw from the weekly music TV show Radio with Pictures, saying how he was assigned a song at the start of the week. He had to shoot and edit a music video by the by Friday on very limited time and money budgets. Was there anything that you learned from the people in the book that you were really just surprised about how DIY the Clean were?
Yeah, yes, exactly, Zach. I was surprised. I knew that. Well, I knew they had recorded themselves on a two-track very early on in 1980. I had no idea that they had got their first PA built. They had saved up to get a PA built. So they had their own PA. They saved up to get their own van. And a van was vital. I remember someone wrote an essay about how important a van was to a band's career for an indie band, because if it broke down, you were stuffed and you couldn't meet your commitment. So something as fundamental as machinery like that was vital to them being, to making a go of it. But the fact they got their own speakers built, and yeah, it sort of blew me away. They were farm boys, you know, so they... The Kilgore brothers had grown up on farms, so, I'm loath to use the term, you know, do-it-yourself, number eight wire, but there wasn't that element in their thinking, you know, we can do this, we'll do it ourselves. So they go to an engineering shop, you know, audio engineering shop in Murray Place and you know, get these speakers built by Mr. Middleditch, you know. Mm. I spoke to his son in the book. So all these things kept springing up, Zach, that were great parts of the story that became included in the story.
Mm-hmm. There was one thing that really fascinated me. It was reading about the making of Boodle, Boodle, Boodle and the Clean's Auckland gig in 12 September 1981, which coincided with the All Blacks' third test match against the Springboks, which is pretty nuts, given the political atmosphere then. David mentions that in the 70s, in the late 70s, cops would try arrest anyone over anything, especially in Auckland, whether that's postering around the city or going to a Toy Love gig. Do you think we underestimate just how gnarly the police were back in those days, and in many cases still are?
Well, they were certainly, there was a kind of team policing strain of the cops, where they would come into pubs, you know, and book anyone. There was just unnecessarily aggressive, you know. The police were really aggressive then. There was a lot of violence in the street, and I mean, the David and Hamish talk about the violence in 1979 when they went to Auckland, just out of hand, gang violence where one of their mates gets bashed and needs stitches. And so, yeah, it was a pretty violent time, and maybe, you know, the police were part of the violence. We were a violent society, you know, and I think that comes out in the book. And everyone has similar stories like that. Graham Downs talks about that from the Verlaines. He talks about the violence as well. Mm. And how anything could happen, or point that thing, I can't remember which one he says, became a kind of anthem of about the violence that was happening, you know. So it was violent. My own experience, I went to the UK in 83, and I never saw any violence. I came back to Dunedin and went to the Captain Cook Tavern, and outside the pub I saw someone having their head kicked in. I mean, there's always been that strain of violence here. I think I kind of think it's less now, but I don't know. Maybe I just don't go to the pub so much.
I think the violence is definitely less. But it was very interesting hearing them focus on, I guess, the police violence, especially before things like the Riot Squad or the Red Squad, I think David mentions, sort of came into force. But I really want to applaud you for compiling this book full of photos of the Clean, their associated company, their friends, their family, and other Dunedin music icons. The book is chocker with commentary and words from all those people. It took you 18 months to interview everyone and get comments from everyone. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but my one last question is, how did you plug sort of contradictory stories? Did you have to follow up on a lot of things that people's memories sort of phased out on?
Yeah, I did. And I mean, I was incredibly lucky that the Clean had a great archive. So I could cross-check things. They had letters, they had diaries. Robert Scott had great letters, diaries. So I could use all that to kind of straighten out the story. And also, I got to pay tribute to Craig Robertson, who wrote the Chris Knox book, you know, Not Given Lightly. His research was scrupulous. So I could cross-reference stuff with him, with Alec Bathgate also, who kept every date of the list of enemy gigs. So, you know, I had these things that some, there was always an archivist in a band, Zach, and, you know, Alec Bathgate was outstanding in having a lot of dates that were critical to the early years when people's memories were really hazy. And so I was able to sequence events and pretty much sort out memories that were wrong and correct them. And yeah, so they happened right up until the end of, you know, publication, really.
Mm-hmm. And I like that they're all analog archives. Like if someone wanted to make a retrospective of a band who are operating right now, you could go through their social media. But if you go through diary entries, there's so much introspection, there's so much vulnerability in there, you couldn't find in a promotional post on social media. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Richard. I really appreciate your time. Do you have any final thoughts or words for our listeners?
Just that we're so lucky that the Kilgour brothers and Bob kept all their stuff and Alec Bathgate, because we have a record and it's a great, accurate, colourful record, and we're all stoked with the book. We all think it's the book the Clean should have had. It looks like the book about the Clean, and from the cover, you know, it just, yeah, we love it.
Mm-hmm. It's a very, very beautiful book. Thank you so much for coming on and making this book. People, if you're interested in buying the book, you can do so at Whitcalls and the Auckland University Press website. Coming up very shortly, we're going to have a chat with Max White and Reef Brazendale from Bunchy's Big Score about their new single, Oscar Says. We're going to play the Clean's In the Dream Life, You Need a Rubber Soul, the title of this new book. Ka kite.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.